5 seconds to submergence. Submergence deep into the absurd.
Hello. Welcome back to the podcast. I've got a very special episode for you guys today. It's an episode on Mr. Robot, a favorite show of mine. I love Mr. Robot. I spent a lot of time watching it last month. A lot of time, way too much time. And there are so many philosophical revelations just kind of hidden within it. And it's all about psychology, power, drama, control, everything. And I kind of took a deep dive onto how it analyzes society, psychology, the modern human, how it relates to Ted Kaczynski's Industrial Society and its future, how it relates to Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil, the power dynamics of the show, and, of course, identity crisis, which is a huge topic in Mr. Robot. Honestly, probably a bigger topic than society is. So, I want to give this to you guys. It's going to be a different format. I play a lot of clips from the show during the episode. And I hope you like the new format. Let me know how you feel about it. If you want to get in touch with Into the Absurd with me, but you don't really want to go through the website and send an email, just follow me on Instagram at into.the.absurd. That's into.the.absurd. Follow me on Instagram. I'm trying to build my following. There is about 1,400 people who follow this podcast on Spotify. And I'd like to increase the numbers on Instagram so that way when I go and try to reach out to new guests, they're not like, oh, this guy only has 90 followers. Like, you know, no one probably knows about him. I think it would help get more interesting guests on the show. I think the guests that I currently have on the show are awesome, but I think it would help my outreach as far as getting a larger follower count. So if you're a listener of the podcast and you want to help support the podcast, just go follow me on Instagram at into.the.absurd. And if you also want to support the podcast in another way, go to into-the-absurd.com and purchase a copy of my novel On Death and God. Without further ado, let's get right into it. The green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant. And a fake plastic girl. What you bought from a rubber man in a town full of rubber plants to get rid. Who is around?
was missed. It was missed. It was missed. And if I could be who you wanted, if I could be
Now, I know what you're thinking. If you're anything like me, you know that no matter how insightful, informative, or inspirational this podcast might be, it will still be just that, a podcast, another modern-day vampire sucking out every last drop of your attention. You tell yourself you need to stop, that everything takes longer if a podcast or a YouTube video is in your ear, but then you do, and everyday mundane things in your life start toppling onto each other, and it has you crawling right back. We live in a world where production and consumption exist in an endless loop. The more we produce, the more we consume in order to tolerate the physical and psychological strain that such production forces upon us. We spend our day working for invisible masters, then waste the rest of it playing with their toys. Constantly distracted, modern life feels empty. Our jobs are meaningless, and we're alienated from the why behind all our actions. Then we attempt to fill the void with junk food, junk entertainment, and junk about everything else. The real world has, at last, become a myth. Just as Nietzsche predicted, plastic, fake, a show, a spectacle, as David Foster Wallace would call it. We're isolated and alone, surrounded by fake, plastic people, and as Radiohead would say, fake, plastic trees. Of course, all the junk and plastic and cheap, fake stuff is just there as a distraction to keep us in the loop, keep us going, keep the system running, not by conspiracy or design, but merely as a natural evolution of our society. Self-replication is how all systems work, how all systems survive. The natural chaos of reality is always at odds with this. It is what creates diversity, random mutations, growth, etc. Enter Elliot Alderson, security software engineer by day, computer hacker, vigilante by night. He's also the protagonist of USA Network's Mr. Robot, which I just binge-watched for the past 4 weeks. So much time was lost, I fell into the trap, the time warp. Over a month without a podcast, without writing, without reading, nights wasted, mornings waking up with 4 hours of sleep. Tired. Long days at work, a constant longing for just one more episode, a TV junkie, just about as addicted to Mr. Robot as Elliot was addicted to morphine in season one. Yep, I fell for it, the allure of a fantasy world that wasn't my own. And so, what better way to pay for the time that this show brought upon me than to sublimate that into a podcast? Deflect the time vampire onto you, the listener. Don't you remember? The abused becomes the abuser. Now, I've quoted this before and I'll quote it again. Whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster. And if you gaze long enough into an abyss, the abyss will gaze back into you. Friedrich Nietzsche from Beyond Good and Evil. For Elliot Alderson, the monster he fights is the top 1% of the top 1%.
What I'm about to tell you is top secret. A conspiracy bigger than all of us. There's a powerful group of people out there that are secretly running the world. I'm talking about the guys no one knows about, the guys that are invisible. The top 1% of the top 1%, the guys that play God without permission.
And indeed, through Elliot's fight against the top 1%, and by proxy, his fight against society itself, he ends up helping them to control society to a further degree. The financial crisis brought on by Elliot's hack eventually leads to the U.S. and many other nations having to use E-Corp, a cryptocurrency controlled by the world's largest conglomerate, E-Corp, or to Elliot, Evil Corp. His blind rage likewise leads him to make severally morally questionable decisions, screw people over to get what he wants, and lose touch with the people who care about him the most. That is, in the fight against the top 1% of the top 1%, against the people he claims to have caused so much suffering on this planet, Elliot becomes almost just as evil. He develops an any means necessary to justify the ends mentality. Now, I must ask, what is evil? Most evil in the world comes from a place of fear, desperation, or even love. This kind of evil is predictable, for it is the same kind of evil by which the so-called good have within them. Fight evil believing you're good, and you'll become what you sought to destroy. I've brought this up again and again on the podcast. Quote, the good man sees the whole world as evil. But then there's a different kind of evil, an evil that's unpredictable, chaotic, and destructive. The motives of this evil have nothing to do with fear, desperation, nor love. There are no good intentions. In fact, the intentions go beyond anything moral at all. It is destruction for the sake of destruction. As evil comes from good, chaos comes from peace, from nothingness. Chaos tricks the world into fighting amongst themselves. Good fights good, believing the other to be evil. It is as such that chaos wins. Elliot has four different personalities, which were revealed at the end of the show. For purposes of this episode, I will only discuss two of them, Mr. Robot and the Mastermind. Mr. Robot is the father Elliot always wanted but never had. He is the protector and his motivator. The Mastermind, of whom the viewer believes to be the real Elliot for the entire show until the finale, is the Elliot who seeks to fight the top 1% of the top 1%, and he always has a plan to pull it off. Going forward, I'll simply refer to the Mastermind as Elliot and Mr. Robot as Mr. Robot. And in fact, throughout the entire series, the viewer practically sees the two as different people. Right? You see Mr. Robot, which is played by a different actor than Elliot. And Mr. Robot is actually supposed to be his father, but the father that he never had, so it's played by the same actor, also plays his father in the series. It's really weird. It's kind of trippy. I highly recommend going and watching the show. Actually, even before you, I forgot to say spoilers alert, but before you even dive into this episode, I highly recommend checking out the show. Now, Mr. Robot believes the means always justify the ends, and his plans are often morally flawed. That is, they might involve killing people, blowing up a building, etc. The Mastermind, on the other hand, believes the ends only justify the means if the means are limited in the harm they do to bystanders. Now, this does change over time. Elliot does eventually start to believe that the means do justify the ends, and he does kind of become a monster. Now, in many ways, while Mr. Robot isn't totally amoral, he certainly has the attributes of chaos, while Elliot has the attributes of the good man fighting evil. And I'd say both of them have the quality of the good man fighting evil, but Mr. Robot is a bit more chaotic. He's kind of more the, he's kind of more Joker-esque. He has this, psychoticism about him, this, unhinged, don't really know what he's going to do next kind of thing going on with him, right? So, throughout the series, both Elliot and Mr. Robot slowly meet in the middle and begin to see the flaws in their motives and actions. As a disclaimer, I wanted to mention that I don't necessarily believe in an objective good or evil. And when I mention these topics, I mean them in context of society or as a character sees them. Notably, I am referring to Elliot and Mr. Robot's view on good and evil. When Elliot, quote-unquote, meets Mr. Robot, we sort of learn Mr. Robot's view on morality along with his role in Elliot's psyche.
My dad was a petty thief. Never could hold down a job, so he just robbed. Convenience stores, shops, small-time stuff. One time he sat me down, he told me something I never forgot. He said, everyone steals. That's how it works. You think people out there are getting exactly what they deserve? No. They're getting paid over or under. Someone in the chain always gets bamboozled. I steal, son. But I don't get caught. That's my contract with society. Now, if you can catch me stealing, then I'll go to jail. If you can't, then I've earned the money. I respected that, man. I thought that shit was cool. As a little kid. A few years after that, they finally caught him. Send him to jail. Dies 5 years later. My respect goes with him. I thought he was free doing what he did, but he wasn't. He was in prison. Just like you are now, Elliot. I'm gonna break you out.
You're in prison, and I'm gonna break you out. So, Mr. Robot believes that everyone either steals or is getting stolen from. So why not steal from those who steal the most, right? This is kind of this, this is a Robin Hood mentality, right? And again, he is the motivator and the protector. Again, I'm going to break you out, Elliot. Mr. Robot acts as the Morpheus to Elliot's Neo. He shows him not the truth, but rather a way towards the truth. And in fact, later on, Mr. Robot almost directly quotes Morpheus, but without the symbolism. And I'm going to share this as well.
Giving him all the information.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you sense something wrong with the world. Something you can't explain. But you know it controls you and everyone you care about.
What are you talking about?
Money. Money hasn't been real since we got off the gold standard. It's become virtual. Software, the operating system of our world. And Elliot, we are on the verge of taking down this virtual reality.
Yeah, so he's, I mean, you can't really get any closer to the Matrix here. I mean, he even says we're getting so close to taking down this virtual reality. Like, we're in this fake world. Like, this money, this economic system that we exist within puts us in this filter, this fake world where everything is controlled by this imaginary symbol, right? And we're all working our whole lives to get it. Every day we're trying to get more money, more money, more money. But money is imaginary. We're trying to get a piece of paper that has a symbolic level of value that only works if we all agree to it, if we all believe in it, right? Just like the Matrix. The Matrix only works if you believe that you're in the Matrix. Or if you know that you're in the Matrix, but you just accept it. You just accept that you're in the Matrix, right? Now, in the Matrix, when Morpheus is about to give Neo the red pill, he says, quote, "I know exactly what you mean. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?" End quote. Yet, to Mr. Robot, the thing controlling the world that can't be explained isn't the Matrix, but rather money. Money is the thing that is forcing people into this endless mundane loop of going to work, eating, sleeping, then going back to work. Money is the Matrix. It is the simulation. It is the thing in which the AI, or for Mr. Robot's case, the top 1% of the top 1%, are extracting from humankind. F Society, the hacker group formed by Mr. Robot, i.e. Elliot, is then akin to the group of rebels working outside the Matrix. They know about those who control the Matrix and want to take them down. Mr. Robot goes on to explain their entire plan.
What if you could take down one conglomerate? A conglomerate so deeply entrenched in the world's economy, too big to fail doesn't even come close to describing it.
You want to create another financial meltdown like the one we just had, but way worse. Yeah, why would I want that? Everyone would lose their money.
What if I told you that this conglomerate just so happens to own 70% of the global consumer credit industry, huh? If we hit their data center just right, we could systematically format all the servers, including backup.
That would erase
all the debt we owe them. Every record of every credit card, loan, and mortgage would be wiped clean. It'd be impossible to reinforce outdated paper records. It'd all be gone. The single biggest incident of wealth redistribution in history.
That is, they're going to hack E-Corp, delete all financial records, steal the money from the wealthiest people on Earth, then redistribute it to everyone. Now, with that said, I definitely think this show is basically the marriage between Fight Club and The Matrix. And if you love these movies as much as I do, then I know for a fact that you will love Mr. Robot. Going back to the topic of morality, both Mr. Robot and Elliot believe they are good people, and that the people they are fighting against are evil. Mr. Robot's determination to defeat this evil force is more chaotic, while Elliot's is controlled. They both, however, seem to slowly become the monsters they are seeking to fight. There is a great scene in season 4 that expresses this. Elliot essentially blackmails a woman named Olivia, who works for the bank of the main antagonist, White Rose.
You know I may work for monsters. But you are one. And you're the worst kind because you don't even know it.
I may work for monsters, but you are one. And you're the worst kind because you don't even know it. Elliot started off as an idealist, with lines he wouldn't cross. But over time, as the monsters he sought to destroy kept evading him, he slowly kept moving those lines further and further away. It is here that we take a closer look into the quote-unquote morality of Elliot and Mr. Robot. Is this their fight against evil, or is this their fight to regain power over themselves? That is, are they doing this for the good of society, or are they doing this to obtain a sense of power, a feeling of control? Part of Elliot's anger towards society is the fact that society controls his and everyone else's lives. There's an illusion of choice surrounding every decision. Work is slavery with extra steps.
and life is an endless repetition of the same. Indeed, society does feel as though it is controlling our every minute, whether it be our jobs, the media we consume, the entertainment we enjoy, the politicians we listen to, the laws and social constructs we abide by, or the taxes we are forced to pay. We have little to no say over the matters of this world. We are fish living in the water of society, and there is no escape. Unless you go out in the woods and try to live out your days in the woods, there isn't really an escape from it. We live in this vacuum, this fishbowl, just like I said. And it's a lot like that Pink Floyd song, right? Except we're not two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl. We're millions of lost souls swimming in a fishbowl. And everyone's so lost nowadays. And this kind of goes back to Nietzsche's idea that God is dead, right? That now that religion is in decline, that religion is gone, people don't have a greater thing to believe in. They don't have an ideal to strive for. They don't have it anymore. Nietzsche believed that the overman would be the next ideal for people to strive for, to be a better self. But most people don't have that capacity. They don't have a better self to strive for. They have, because they need something, they need a reason to strive for a better self, right? And with religion being dead in modern day society, that doesn't exist. So people are lost souls. And they're trying to latch on to any kind of meaning that they can find to fill this void of meaning. And I don't even think that's because of the lack of religion, but there's a lack of time to devote to the spirit. There isn't time to write. There isn't time to paint. There isn't time to laugh with your friends. There isn't time to go on a hike. We're all so distracted. And even if you are on a hike, you might be taking so many pictures. You might be texting your friends. You might be distracted from the hike. We're so distracted, constantly consuming, just like I mentioned at the beginning. The abused become the abuser, right? I consume a lot of media. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. I watch a lot of TV. I consume a lot of media. And now I am creating media for you to consume, right? It's a perpetual loop. In a modern day society, we're stuck, lost, fish swimming in a fishbowl, and it feels like we cannot escape. This is a topic brought up by Mark Fisher in his book, Capitalist Realism. It seems there is no way out of this society, and whenever people try to think of one, they are so hopeless that such a world seems, quote-unquote, unrealistic. Going back to the comparison with The Matrix, we see that this is precisely the type of thinking that is going on in Mr. Robot. For Neo, it is The Matrix, and for Elliot, it is society. Money and society are more or less similes to Elliot. These two forces control one another, and consequently, they each control the individual. To demonstrate just how much money controls people, I once did a little experiment, or a demonstration, I might call it. I was in this weird educative role in my fraternity. They were doing some like continued ed thing, and I signed up to be the leader, or what, the like brother leader or whatever. So one day I wanted to discuss the importance of money. 10 of us stood in a circle, and I pulled down a dollar bill, and I just ripped that dollar bill in half, ripped in half. And then I asked, how did that make you feel? Now, but before I even asked that, one of the frat brothers, or whatever you'd call them, And I knew that he had the wealthiest family in that group. I knew that he had the wealthiest family in that group. And it was weird because before I even asked, how did that make you feel? He kind of just exclaimed. He like, kind of like loudly, he said, "Why would you do that?" It was like this knee-jerk reaction that he had. And the others, they didn't really care that much. Now, money controls us. And what Elliot recognizes right off the bat is that the top 1% of the top 1%, although being the most powerful people on Earth, although controlling most of the world's affairs, they're still controlled by money. In fact, no matter how powerful you are, there's always something else that has influence over you, right? Because if you really thought about it, as living beings, we are dependent on our environment to fulfill our needs. No matter what, we are dependent upon our environment. We're not self-sufficient. We can't just, we're not plants. We can't just get energy from the sun. And even plants are, they're dependent on their environment too. They're dependent on the sun being there, right? To give them food, give them energy, give them warmth. Everyone is dependent upon their environment. And if your environment is a world of money, then that world of money controls you. You are dependent on that world of money. So the top 1% of the top 1%, they're dependent on this world controlled by money. They're dependent on money itself. Now, let me take a few minutes to go on a Nietzsche power rant. Quote, "The non-free will is a mythology. In real life, it is only a question of strong and weak wills." End quote. This is from Friedrich Nietzsche, Beyond Good and Evil. More or less, Nietzsche is trying to tell us that the question of free will is one that clearly can't be answered. We cannot prove that one has full dominion over all of their decisions. In fact, the premise to free will and non-free will is likewise a mythology, as it presupposes that a person has a unified will, and that that will either does or does not have full dominion over its decisions. Nietzsche argues, to the contrary, that individuals have a multiplicity of wills within them. He goes further to suggest that these wills each have within them a certain will to power, that is, an instinct to dominate whatever body or space they inhabit. According to this argument, happiness and sadness are then both wills within the human mind. They both strive to be the dominant will for an individual. But one or the other or some other emotion always ends up being more powerful, depending on the day or the time, right? You're going to feel anxious today. You might feel happy tomorrow. You might feel anxious in a couple of seconds for a few minutes and then feel happy again, right? It's a never-ending battle between your emotions. And these emotions are also affected by other wills. They're affected by the wills of the environment, the wills of atoms, the wills of everything, basically, right? There's infinitely many things going on, right? There are physical wills. For instance, if you're hungry and at the same time have to go to the bathroom, you will do whichever one exerts the most power upon your decision at that moment, right? If you're hungrier than you need to go to the bathroom, you're probably going to eat. If you have to go to the bathroom more than you're hungry, you're going to go to the bathroom. And as individuals, we likewise face a multiplicity of wills within other people, as well as natural forces, physical laws, global and microeconomics, the laws and regulations of governments, social customs, etc. In other words, everyone and everything contains within them a multiplicity of wills that are either stronger, weaker, or equal in strength to other wills, thus determining their presence in the current moment. In this context, a will is more or less a physical or non-physical force, right? To think of it another way, if you are exerting your will upon something, all this really is saying is that you're affecting it in some way, shape, or form. So when considering the will in reference to the will to power, we are then implying a goal behind the exertion of the will. That is, one exerts their will in order to obtain power. Yet since this is not necessarily a power, or since this is not necessarily a person, and most usually is not the will to power, is the exertion of a force which leads to the increase of that force's power over something else. Nietzsche argues that this is what all wills tend towards. So, according to Nietzsche, it is neither us nor cause-effect relationships that determine our decisions, but rather a heaving swarm of indeterministic variables. Systems are dynamic. And his largest argument against this is the myth of causality. The reasoning for the myth of causality is given more or less with the why game. That is, when a child learns how to use the word why, they will continuously ask why to each answer you give to their question. This will go on and on until the parent eventually either gives up or tells them to stop or the child gets bored. Right? Nietzsche explains it more so with the fact that we cannot prove there to be an original cause to everything. We can't draw our line of cause-effect relationships all the way back to the beginning of time. Likewise, if every event has infinitely many causes, then it would be equally valid to say that every event has no causes, right? Because if all your decisions are the result of infinitely many other decisions, infinitely many forces, the wind blowing in Asia 2 hours ago, or Mars moving an inch to the left. If everything that you do is a result of everything else, then that means that nothing is really a result of anything. It's just kind of there, right? It's kind of one heaving swarm of variables, one heaving swarm of things going on, right? So, it is a question of weak and strong wills, not causality. I recommend reading The Four Great Errors from Nietzsche's Twilight of the Idols for a better explanation on this. It's really short, and I highly recommend it. Now, with each will having a will to power, according to Nietzsche, he likewise proposed that the fundamental driving factor behind each organism is that very same will to power. But what exactly is power? What does it mean to be powerful? Just as the will is multifaceted, I believe the definition of power is likewise multifaceted. Like God, love, or happiness, power does not have a single definition. One might define it as having control either of yourself, others, or a situation. Or one might say it's defined by your abilities to change a reality. A materialist might define it as one's ownership of objects, lands, or peoples, whether that be law, force, or manipulation. The spiritually inclined may consider power as nothing more than a feeling, a powerful feeling, such as love, hate, or joy. In many ways, I think Nietzsche's definition of power is simply the act of overcoming something, kind of taking power over it, conquering it. And this fits nicely with his theory of the wills. When we're happy, the will of happiness has overcome all other emotions to make it so, right? Power is the driving force behind overcoming and becoming a positive change. So I wanted to mention that in my two-part series I did on Ted Kaczynski's Industrial Society and Its Future, and I do not condone terrorism, Ted describes power as a process involving goal, effort, and attainment of goal. I'm including this definition of power because it relates to many of the themes involved in Mr. Robot, specifically how modern society strips us of our ability to feel powerful. That, and of course, Eliot's stark similarities to Ted Kaczynski, right? I mean, Eliot is a vigilante, super smart hacker who's trying to take down society. And Ted Kaczynski is a super smart mathematician who also tried to take down society, and also by violent means, right? Indeed, how does modern society infringe on Kaczynski's power process? If we cannot pursue our will to power, if we cannot feel autonomous in our lives nor have any ability to set our own goals and pursue them, then how are we to feel any sort of fulfillment? How does powerlessness affect our psyche and interpersonal relationships? How do power dynamics affect us, our relationships, and society as a whole? How does mass powerlessness affect society? One of the main arguments for capitalism is all the free choices that capitalism is supposed to provide for society, right? While we have the freedom to choose, we are economically forced to do so, right? We have to have either this or that job, pick this or that school, eat here or there, buy this or that product. If we don't, we will either be left homeless on the street, in jail, or as an outcast of society. We buy fake food that fills us up but doesn't make us feel satisfied. We download social media to feel connected, but we never shake that feeling of loneliness. We constantly exercise to rid our body of a multiplicity of toxins, additives, and preservatives in our food. And boom, this brings us back to Mr. Robot. Cue Elliot Society rant.
What is it about society that disappoints you so much?
Oh, I don't know. Is it that we collectively thought Steve Jobs was a great man, even when we knew he made billions off the backs of children? Or maybe it's that it feels like all our heroes are counterfeit. The world itself's just one big hoax. Spamming each other with our running commentary bullshit, masquerading as insight, our social media faking as intimacy. Or is it that we voted for this? Not with our rigged elections, but with our things, our property, our money. I'm not saying anything new. We all know why we do this. Not because Hunger Games books makes us happy, but because we want to be sedated. Because it's painful not to pretend. Because we're cowards. Fuck society.
Now, what's interesting about Mr. Robot is that in the show, Elliot attempts to take down the society that controls him and everyone else. Yet as he does so, he's likewise controlled by his social anxiety, drug addiction, split personality, and schizophrenia, along with several other factors. We see that even after he pulls off the hack, he is still controlled by these things. To add to this, he feels controlled by the movement he started. The thing is, as one of the greatest hackers on planet Earth, Elliot has control over society and big public figures. Yet he struggles to have control over himself, right? This is the kind of the same paradigm with the top 1% of the top 1%. They have control over the world, but they don't have control over themselves. They don't have control over the fact that money is controlling them, right? This parallel is seen with other characters of the show, such as, again, the executives that work for the conglomerate Elliot took down. Right, they have power over their work, yet co-workers, higher-ups, and their own personal insanities have control over them. And we see this with many other characters. Tyrell, one of these executives, is very wealthy. Yet he feels controlled by those above him. He's likewise controlled by his wife and her interests. While being a seemingly powerful man, he feels incredibly powerless. As I watch the show, more and more I am realizing it's not that society controls us, but rather the various things that come with living in society that controls us. Sure, while large investment companies like BlackRock exert quite a lot of power over society, it is not BlackRock that is exerting this power. It's the multifaceted soup of desires and wills held within each and every individual that works for BlackRock, along with all the rules and regulations set forth by past and present executives, the government, market pressures, etc. It's not society that controls us. It is the ideals and wills that are forced to exist and interact within the society, within the bubble society created. We are controlled by money, health, social status, addictions, mental disorders, and so many other things in this world, right? While society allows for some of these things to exist and perpetuate, it is these things existing and perpetuating that likewise allow society to exist and perpetuate, right? It is a perpetual motion machine on a planetary scale. And that's what Ellie discovers after accomplishing his hack. The world went into chaos and hundreds of thousands of people went into poverty. All while the people at the top took advantage of the situation and just gave themselves more power. Right? One thing cannot take down a conglomerate. According to Mr. Robot, if you want to take down a conglomerate, you have to take it down piece by piece. Every little bit of it. Destroy it all. Now, throughout the series, we slowly find out where all the roads of power lead to. That is, White Rose. White Rose is the alter ego of Xi Jiang, the Chinese Minister of State Security. While Xi Jiang is a respected, powerful male government official, his alter ego, White Rose, is a woman who is in charge of an extremely powerful hacker organization called the Dark Army. Elliot's organization, F Society, utilizes the support of the Dark Army to pull off their hacks. What plays even deeper into this, there's always a bigger fish trope, is that White Rose more or less uses F Society to take down E Corp for her own interests. What Mr. Robot does well is showing us the stark parallels between White Rose and Elliot, which are it's the protagonist Elliot and antagonist White Rose, but they're very similar. Both have similar identity issues. Both have spent a good amount of their years trying to not feel powerless. Both are lonely and desperate. Both believe that what they are doing is good and that their means justify their ends, etc., etc. Their differences are that White Rose is essentially the representation of society itself, or more so, the person who controls society. She is at the very top of the top of the 1%. She is the invisible hand that controls everything. While being the head of society, she does not want to preserve it. In fact, she wants to destroy the entire universe with a nuclear fusion reactor. Or, honestly, that part's not really clear. She has, like, this giant machine. You kind of assume that it's a reactor of some sort. I don't know. You don't really know what it is. They never really tell you what it is. I don't know what it is. But you kind of just assume that she's trying to, like, destroy the world and start it over or something. It's weird. So, while being the head of society, she does not want to preserve it. She wants to destroy society, right? Elliot, while claiming to hate society, he genuinely wants to save it, right? He wants to save people from their struggles. He wants people to be happy again, right? He doesn't want people to be trapped. And if you kind of read into motives a little bit more, just like I said earlier, it kind of seems more so that Elliot just wants to feel like he has power over something, that he was abused as a child, and he wants to take that rage out on every single other person who has ever abused anyone. So he's going after the biggest abusers in society, the top 1% of the top 1%, right? Now, while these motives oppose one another, their efforts to attain them equally help one another. Now, from here, I want to discuss identity. Identity is perhaps the biggest theme explored in Mr. Robot from seasons 2 through 4. Who is Elliot Alderson? How can the human being know itself? It is a thing dark and veiled. And if the hare had several skins, the human can slough off 70 times 7 and still not be able to say, now that is what you really are. That is no longer the outer shell. Friedrich Nietzsche from Untimely Meditations. The human being, like almost everything else in the world, is a multifaceted organism. It's just like the conversation that Shrek had with Donkey.
Ogres are like onions.
They stink?
Yes. No.
Oh, they make you cry?
No.
Oh, you leave them out in the sun, they get all brown, start sprouting little white hairs.
No. Layers. Onions have layers. Ogres have layers. Onions have layers. You get it. We both have...
All right, infamous scene. Okay. Ogres and humans alike have layers. We have several wills, desires, and urges that all seek towards different things, right? Similar to how a tree has hundreds of branches and thousands of leaves, yet one trunk in which it all stems from, right? We all have many different sides of ourselves that are expressed when we are in different situations, around different people, etc. I spent much of my life being a totally different person around different people and in different situations, right? We all have many different sides of ourselves that are expressed when we're in different situations around different people. Now, I wasn't ever like an entirely a different person, but I certainly talked differently. I said different things around different people, and I related people in different ways. And this was problematic when I would introduce different friend groups to people, or when I introduced my girlfriends to people, to my parents. I was never really sure how to act because I acted different around different people. I was a people pleaser. I wanted to be who that other person wanted me to be, or who I thought that other person wanted me to be. So I would be that person for them. When I was around that person, I'd be the person they want me to be, right? So if two people want me to be different things for them, right, I'm going to be a different person around those two people. So if I'm in a group where these people want me to be this, these people want me to be that, then, like I won't even know how I should be, right? I'll just be quiet. And it's very confusing when you're in a situation like this, when you can't reconcile the different aspects of yourself. And to clarify again, other people didn't want me to be a certain way. I just believed that they did, right? So it was all based on my own insecurities. Now, to be honest, I don't think I even knew who I was at all when I did those things. It took leaving home for college and being alone, meeting new friends, and the like to slowly learn who I was, who I am. Now, a long time ago, I used to see a therapist, and he told me that what I was struggling with was psychological integration. I didn't know how to combine the different aspects of myself into one fully integrated person. To be the same person around everyone, to an extent, right? Obviously, we're all going to naturally act differently around different people. You're not going to interact with your significant other the same way you interact with your parents or the same way you interact with your friends. But there's a point where being too different around different people can make you feel restricted. Like you aren't fully being yourself around anyone. And it's also kind of a lie. Like you're putting on a show for everyone. You're putting on a show for this person. Like, oh, let me play the friend play, right? Let me, I'll act as the son play. I'll act as the boyfriend play, right? You're acting as a certain person. And by doing that, you're not doing any justice to yourself. You're not doing any justice to the other person because you're not showing them who you really are. And you're kind of being fake. You're being a fake person. Fake plastic trees, right? That's why I played that song at the beginning. And that can be painful. Why do people hide parts of themselves from different people? Now, I discussed this topic in depth on the Severance and the Self episode, which I highly recommend watching Severance and then going and checking that episode if you haven't checked it out. Part of this is fear. Notably, fear of what Jung would call the shadow. That is the subconscious mind. From a psychological integration standpoint, one might show parts of their shadow to some people and none of it to others. Part of this is fear of rejection. Some is embarrassment and some is simply out of habit. In Elliot's case, he shields part of his shadow from himself. Right? He's a different person in different situations, but he shields that different aspect of himself away from him. It's a lot like Severance. He is two different people. He's Mr. Robot and he's Elliot, right? And the show, through his therapy sessions, reveals that this is due to his childhood trauma. He has compartmentalized the different aspects of himself to protect against things that part of him isn't ready to confront. Mr. Robot, again, acts as the protector. And at the end of the show, we find that another part of Elliot has been essentially trapped in a fantasy land where everything is perfect, while Mr. Robot and the Mastermind are wreaking havoc on the world. Elliot doesn't know who he is, and he wants to both integrate his many selves while also wanting to get rid of them. Or more so, each part of himself has a love-hate relationship with each other part of himself, right? He is totally unintegrated, confused, and filled with self-loathing, which he projects onto the world. And all of this is caused by childhood trauma that forced him to compartmentalize. This lack of integration is something his therapist tries to convince him to fix, right? Just like my therapist tried to convince me to fix, right? When Elliot pleads that he needs to destroy Mr. Robot, he replies that Mr. Robot is a part of him. That destroying him will only destroy himself. And in the audience's discovery that what we have known to be Elliot the whole show is actually the mastermind personality, we realize that the mastermind is the personality that seeks to take over and become the one true Elliot. It's not Mr. Robot, right? It is indeed the mastermind personality that locks the true Elliot away. It is the mastermind personality that wants to kill Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot, while wanting to take control over Elliot, doesn't want to kill him. Nor does Mr. Robot ever claim to be the true Elliot. Mr. Robot's just Mr. Robot. Now, with each of Elliot's personalities, he is always a totally different person with an entirely different set of memories. This is actually so extreme that he talks to the different versions of himself, right? He talks to Mr. Robot. He talks to he also talks to this imaginary friend, which is basically the viewer, like he's talking to the audience, but it's kind of his imaginary friend. So his adversary, White Rose, on the other hand, is again two identities, Zhizheng and White Rose. She has the same personality between identities, and she considers White Rose to be her true identity. Much like how Bruce Wayne believes Batman is his identity, and Bruce Wayne is the mask, Zhizheng is White Rose's mask. He is a public figure that handles foreign diplomacy and business deals. White Rose, meanwhile, is the mastermind who lurks in the shadows, playing puppet master to society itself. It is only when she has nothing to lose that she decides to reveal her true self to the world. The psychologist would argue that all the different personalities of Elliot combined is Elliot's true self. Likewise, Zhizheng and White Rose are the same person, just as Batman and Bruce Wayne exist as one man. Elliot separates his personalities as a subconscious defense mechanism. White Rose, on the other hand, separates her identities out of fear of what the public might think. Much like how murder splits the soul in the world of Harry Potter, trauma and fear split our personalities as human beings. There are sides of us that we cannot trust in the hands of others, or in Elliot's case, himself. In fact, in the third season, Elliot and Mr. Robot work behind each other's backs in secret, which is super trippy and really cool. I'm honestly excited for anyone who gets to watch season 3 because it's a lot more cinematic than the other ones. It's a lot of people think that it's the best season. I honestly think season 1 is the best one. Season 1 or season 3 or 2. Anyhow, they try to thwart each other's plans. Now, I find the symbolism of yourself being your greatest enemy as something that truly stands out here. Neither of them can defeat the other. And in a game of chess, they would always reach stalemate. In the season 3 finale, they're working against one another, eventually leads to something far worse than either of them had anticipated. Mr. Robot was trying to blow up a building that all the paper records were going to go to. And Elliot was working at E-Corp, so he was trying to, he was rerouting all the paper records to these other facilities so that he couldn't, blow it up or whatever. He had no reason to blow up the facility or whatever. But then they just ended up changing plans, and then they just blow up all 52 facilities instead, and it ended up killing a lot more people. So them working against each other, actually, it ended up making it all worse, right? When one has conflicting desires or fears, such conflict can force us into a situation where we feel trapped, isolated, and alone. If you cannot act on something because you are afraid to act, yet likewise terrified of not acting, then such a situation is akin to being stuck in a prison cell, right? I'm going to break you out, Elliot. There have been many times in my life where I've felt trapped, right? I've been in those situations. I've often resorted to coping mechanisms such as playing video games, watching TV, working out, eating, smoking weed, you name it. The options and potential decisions, they just laid before me like a storm, right? There was should I do this? Should I do that? And it becomes too much to bear. Instead of acting on any of it, I simply tried to forget I had anything to act upon, right? And in Elliot's case, he is able to simply separate the conflicting parts of himself, thereby allowing him to accomplish both tasks. This is like severance, right? You get max productivity at work because you're always there, and then you get max productivity at home because you're not. But really, you're just freaking depressed in both worlds. Such impressive multitasking only leads to his incredibly unstable mental state. Psychotic episodes increase, his morphine addiction gets worse, his relationships continue to dwindle, and his moral standards deteriorate. His lack of integration tears him apart. Now, in his 1933 book, Modern Man in Search of a Soul, Jung writes, quote, "The meeting of two personalities is like the contact of two chemical substances. If there is any reaction, both are transformed." End quote. According to this, neither Elliot nor the Mastermind nor Mr. Robot are the true Elliot. These are all only part of Elliot. And if these were to interact with one another, such an interaction would transform each personality. That is, in communicating with the different aspects of oneself, one is able to see where each personality aligns. And in so doing, each personality becomes more and more connected to one another. Just as in the relationship between two people, communication forces differences to diminish and similarities to increase. The two personalities transform into one. We see that in the final episode of the show, it is only when Mr. Robot and Elliot work together that the real Elliot is finally revealed. The philosophical depth of this show is something I've really only scratched the surface of in this podcast. And this was a long episode, so it is truly a masterpiece. And it highlights the struggles of the modern world, of the modern man in the modern world, of the modern person in the modern world, which is controlled by power, plagued with insanity, and shrouded in widespread identity crisis. Indeed, who don't you know that doesn't have some kind of mental disorder or identity crisis, right? Mr. Robot shows the flaws of modern society while also demonstrating the issues related to stopping it. I'll leave you with the words of Elliot Alderson. Quote, "This whole time I thought changing the world was something you did, an act you performed, something you fought for. I don't know if that's true anymore, or if changing the world was just about being here, by showing up, no matter how many times we get told we don't belong, by staying true even when we're ashamed into being false, by believing in ourselves, even when we are told we're too different. And if we all held on to that, if we refused to budge and fall in line, if we stood our ground for long enough, just maybe, the world can't help but change around us. Even though we'll be gone, it's like Mr. Robot said, we'll always be a part of Elliot Alderson. And we'll be the best part, because we're the part that showed up. We're the part that stayed. We're the part that changed him. And who wouldn't be proud of that? Thank you for listening.